Welcome to episode 11 of the Haman Lee Mysteries Resolved podcast. My name is Debbie Simons, and this week we are looking at what I consider to be, now that I've thought about the case even more, a love triangle with Haman Lee, Don Kleindienst, and a woman who's been mentioned but who has not been examined fully in this material, Robin Kelly Kleindienst, Don Kleindienst's wife of 25 years. As I've thought about this case more and revolved it around in my head, I've realized that that's really what we're talking about. We have two young women, Haman Lee and Robin, as she was then, Kelly, who were kind of in competition for one man, Don Kleindienst. And so I'm going to be looking at the information about Robin from that perspective. So let's plunge in. And in order to do that, we're going to start by going all the way back to Serial and the interview that Sarah Koenig did with Don sometime probably early 2014. Sarah Koenig has been criticized for many of the things in that original podcast about the case, but she did a lot of excellent shoe leather reporting. And one of the things she did was to track down Don and get him to talk to her. He would not allow her to use his recorded voice nor direct quotations in the podcast, but he did allow her to relay indirectly what he had said. It's an interesting question about how she managed to track him down in the first place. Because if you remember, if you've been interested in this case since Serial, you know that there was a long time, about 5 years, when Don's last name had not been publicly released. He was always identified as Don C. And in any police reports or trial transcripts, his last name was redacted. I'm assuming that Sarah Koenig, as an investigative journalist, had sources and was able to get access to the unredacted versions of those documents. And so she tracks him down and she talks to him. He tells her a lot of baloney. So he says he still loves Hay and he thinks about her every day, blah, blah, blah. He also tells this ridiculous story, at least I think it's ridiculous, about Hay wanting him to call the school and pose as someone with authority and say Hay won't be at school today because she wanted to spend the day with him. But I think that's just Don's way of slipping in the little factoid that he was working that day. So with that in mind, realizing that not everything that Don says is reliable, let's take a look at what he says that I think is reliable and very pertinent to the subject matter of this episode. He tells Sarah Koenig two things about his prior dating life. Number one, he says that he had been cheated on in the past. And the implication is, from various other things he says, that he's lost a lot of confidence, that he's been kind of down on himself. And he says to Sarah, Hay changed him. And when he would get depressed and feeling rejected, she would tell him to knock it off. So that's the first little nugget. He'd been cheated on in the past. Number two, he says that he'd been dating someone else when Hay first came to LensCrafters in the fall of 98. But then, and here are the key words, but then that came to an end. And so on January 1st, 1999, Hay and Don had their first date. So I want to look at these two small pieces of information before we go on into the actual dating relationship of Hay and Don. Who was this person who cheated on Don? And who was this person who was dating Don when Hay showed up at LensCrafters? I'm going to assume that they're one and the same person, simply because we have so little information about Don's romantic life. We have no one except for Robin and Hay, whom he was ever romantically involved with. So I'm going to assume that this person who cheated on him is the same person he was dating when he met Hay, because then it makes sense. The sequence makes sense psychologically. He's just been rejected. He's just been dumped. And then this bright, funny, pretty girl just launches herself at him, and it's a big boost to his ego. Who was this person who did the cheating, who was dating him? Well, again, since we have so little information about any kind of romantic entanglements of Don's, I think this almost has to be Robin. That the idea is he was dating her, and then she, what he calls, cheated on him. What does that mean? That she was sneaking around behind his back? I don't know. But that she let him know, I'm interested in somebody else. And that's a huge blow to his self-esteem. So now he decides, well, fine. I'm going to date this other girl who's been chasing me, following me into the break room, telling me that I really should date her. All pieces of information we also get from Sarah Koenig's interview. Why not? Why not? Classic rebound situation, my friends. So what happens? There's Don kind of down in the mouth, and here comes Hay. And let me read you from Hay's actual diary about how the date came about. That first date on January 1st, New Year's Day, 1999, how it came about, where they went, and to explode some of the misconceptions about this date. And I will say here, by the way, that people who consider themselves to be experts on this case, I'm not talking about just people who are interested in it, but people who want to be seen as authoritative had better read this diary. Because I hear mistakes over and over again about this case being repeated, and I think, have you people not read the diary? So remember, Hay's actual physical paper diary is the only contemporaneous first-person transcript account of the events of the time. And we don't have anything else except for Hay's two short notes, one written to Adnan sometime at the beginning of November, telling him she feels that they need to break up, the famous breakup note, and then the one to Don that we now know was written on January 5th, the hey cutie, sorry I couldn't stay note, which Don actually never got. But other than those two things, we just have the diary, the paper diary. And as I've said before, and I will just refer to again here briefly, there are big gaps in Hay's paper diary. She does not talk about getting her job at LensCrafters and meeting Don for the first time, for instance. She does not talk about the homecoming dance when Adnan's parents showed up and made Adnan leave and her decision to break up with Adnan. She doesn't talk about any of that. But we know that she kept some kind of diary on her computer because she says that in her paper diary. She says, I'm such a lazy writer, but I did write something on the comp, C-O-M-P, period, the computer. But as I've said before, and I just mentioned, that computer disappeared. I would like to think that it's somewhere in the bowels of the evidence lockers of the Baltimore City Police Department, and some intrepid Indiana Jones could go in there and find it and access those files. But for now, all we have is the paper diary. So Don and Hay make plans to go out. I'm going to read you what she actually says. This is from her January 2nd, 1999 entry. She says, "Happy 99, big all caps letters and exclamation points. Ready to party and graduate? Anyways, I got to tell you about yesterday," which of course was New Year's Day. "Guess who had a date with Donald R. Kleindienst III? 2 question marks. Me! On Thursday, 12:31, I picked up Adnan from his work and dropped him off at Sears so he could pick up his car." Now, I'll just stop here for a minute. This is almost certainly the source of that idea that the ride that Adnan was asking for on January 13th was to go pick up his car. That's not what that was. And we see here clearly the source of that idea. That's why you need to read the diary. Okay. I thought of waiting for him, but for some reason, I had to go up to OMM, which is Owings Mills Mall, of course. So she says she thought of waiting for him, that is Adnan. Waiting for him, I don't know what she means by that. Adnan is picking up his car, so he has transportation. Maybe waiting for him to be sure that the car was all done so that she was sure he had a ride. I don't know. But anyway, her phrasing is kind of telling. I had, all caps. When I got there, I saw his Camaro. And she doesn't even have to identify who he is, which was surprising since he wasn't working that day. So that tells us she's been checking the work schedule. Well, when I was going to pull up next to his car, he was walking toward his car. I stopped and talked to him, flirting around with him as usual. All caps again and underlined. Well, he actually let me drive his car around OMM. What a car. Well, we flirted around a little more and finally decided to go for dinner on the first. Now, notice her wording here. I think perhaps I'm reading into the text more than is warranted, but it seems to me that this date was kind of Hay's idea, at least at first. "I mean, what a day to start a new year," she goes on to say. "Well, I got to work on the first. Wait, I spent the New Year's Eve at Aisha's with," and then she talks about the party she went to. I'm not going to bother with that. Then she says, "I had to wake up at 9 to get to work." So this is on New Year's Day. Now, I find this kind of interesting that the mall and LensCrafters was going to be open on New Year's Day. That's not the case now, typically, I don't think. Usually, stores are closed on Christmas Day and New Year's Day and maybe a couple, and Thanksgiving Day, perhaps. But anyway, she has to go to work. "When I got there, Don was there, of course. He is so cute and funny. Cool." And then she puts in, "I found my fave red pen." Huh. Let's keep our eyes fixed on the essentials, hey? Anyway, he changed into a green sweater and jeans. His sweater made his green eyes look so incredible, since his eyes turn green to blue to gray. He has real beautiful eyes. Real beautiful. Well, after work, we went all the way up to Aberdeen. We got to Olive Tree, where we sat and ate. I had crab cakes, which was really good. I loved it. Me and Don had a fun conversation. We were talking about a lot of things, from LensCrafters to, and then I can't read this word. The last three letters are O-U-S, I think, but I cannot read the first letter. To his name, Donald Robert Kleindienst III. Wow. I don't think I've ever felt this weird before, but I really also think I like him. We came back to the OMM and we just sat and talked. I really wanted him to kiss me, but not dot, dot, dot. He's too much of a gentleman for that. Wow, what a guy. He is so kind, caring, intelligent, incredibly cute, funny, amusing, and way down to earth. Okay, now there's a lot of gold to be mined out of that account. Let me just say, first of all, that boy, Hay's impression of Don is very, very different from Deborah Renner's impression of him, that he was creepy, that he gave her the creeps, that he had this very dark personality. That is, of course, not at all what Hay sees him as. But what do we find out from this diary entry? Well, as I said, the going out to dinner was probably initially Hay's little hint dropped. How about getting together to celebrate the new year? Something like that. But I want you to notice, and this is something that no one else has ever talked about as far as I could tell, what a conventional and very well thought out, well planned date this is on Don's part. Let's see what he does. First of all, he takes her to a very nice place. Now, if I hear one more person say, oh, well, Don took Hay to an Olive Garden and he took her someplace far away so nobody would see him with her, I think I'm going to tear my hair out. Even Colin Miller repeats this idea that Don's and Hay's first date was somewhere where nobody would see them, because he's postulating Don has another girlfriend on the side and he doesn't want that girlfriend to know about his date with this other girl. That is absolutely not true. If you spend a few minutes looking at Google Maps and also looking up the olive tree, it is not the Olive Garden, then you'll see that this whole idea of trying to keep this date with Hay a secret is baloney. I know I overused that word, but there's a lot of baloney in this case being said about it. So it's in Aberdeen. Guess what direction Aberdeen, Maryland is from Owings Mills Malls? It's back toward Bel Air, where Don lives. It's about 10 miles from Don's address in Bel Air. So one might ask, if Don is trying to hide this date from Hay, why does he pick a place that is closer to his house than the mall is? If he just wanted to hide the fact from his friends and family that he was dating this girl, he would have taken her, the easiest thing would have been to take her someplace around the mall, or indeed in the mall itself, perhaps even the Ruby Tuesdays, where he and Hay and Aisha Pittman and her boyfriend are going to go for dinner on their double date on January 6th. But he drives towards Aberdeen. He drives towards his home. And this place, this Olive Tree, is not a chain restaurant. There's nothing wrong with Olive Garden. I'll post a link in the show notes, by the way, to a very funny video about a real Italian going to Olive Garden for the first time. She's not terribly impressed, shall we say. But the Olive Tree is, I believe it was a family-owned restaurant. I don't know if that's still true, but it's a standalone. And it really prides itself. It's been around for 40 years. It's still there. I looked it up. I looked at their menu. They pride themselves on their great food and their extensive menu. Hay tells us what she got. She says, I had the crab cakes. Well, guess what? The crab cakes are the most expensive item on the menu. Right now, in 2025, they're $35. I don't have any idea, of course, what they cost back in 1999. So that's, you know, that's not $100 a plate, but still, that's a fairly substantial amount of money adjusted for inflation for somebody who just has a retail job at a mall. So he spends some money on her. There's no hint that they went Dutch or anything like that. And he goes to quite a bit of effort and time to go to this particular restaurant because it's all the way back towards where he lives, 30 or 40 miles. He could have made things so much easier on himself if he'd just taken her somewhere around Owings Mills Malls. But the people who say he was trying to keep this data secret have forgotten that Don worked 40 miles from where he lived because of the fact that he had to transfer when LensCrafters made that new policy that family members could not work at the same store. So he's already a long ways from home when he's at work. And everybody at work, of course, knows about Hayes chasing him. So I don't think there's any big secret to be kept there. The fact of the matter is that Don goes to a great deal of trouble, some expense, and he tries to impress Hay for this date. What does he do? Well, let me read this again. It says, he, that is Don, changed into green sweater and jeans. His sweater made his green eyes look so incredible. Now, you know, I'd read that about 5 million times, I think, at a rough estimate, before it struck me, well, now, wait a minute here. That means the fact that he changed into this new outfit, that means he brought those clothes along to change into. He didn't think, oh, I'll just take off my lab coat and just go in whatever I normally wear to work. No, he made a special effort. Again, he makes a special effort about the location, and he makes a special effort about what he wears. And if you count up the miles that he drives just for this one date, it's well over 100 miles. He drives about 40 miles to the restaurant. It's 10 miles from Bel Air where he lives, but it's farther south. So you go on a different trajectory from the mall. So he drives to the restaurant, and they spend some time there and some money. And then he has to drive all the way back to Owings Mills because that's where Hay's car is. So now we're up to 80 miles or so. But then, after they sit in the parking lot and talk for a while, he has to then get back home. So that's another 40 miles. These are not the actions of a young man who's just trying to have a sneaky first date with somebody. And notice again what Hay actually says. I really wanted him to kiss me, but not. He's too much of a gentleman for that. An utterly conventional first date where the guy wants to impress the girl. So now we have kind of a promising start to this relationship. And then Hay's diary goes silent until January 6th. We have no idea what happened after that, in that really pretty important week when they've just started this new relationship. We do have one hint that there may have been another date before the January 6th double date with Aisha Pittman and her boyfriend. And this is from a police report from the redoubtable Officer O'Shea, who interviews Hay's uncle, Tae-Soo Kim. Now, I've said before, and I will say again, I am totally impressed with Officer O'Shea. He does a lot of work that he does not have to do. So this police report takes place at Mr. Kim's store. And this is towards the ballpark, Camden Yards ballpark. I don't know why O'Shea did not interview Tae-Soo Kim at his home. That would have been a lot easier. I think it would have been a lot closer to the Baltimore County Police Station. I'm not sure. It's not really quite clear. And we don't really know for sure how good Mr. Kim's English was. There's no mention in this police report about there being a translator present. So I guess his English was good enough for him to answer some rudimentary questions. So let's see what this police report says. Mr. Kim said the only problem Hay had at home was an argument with her mother on 1-3-99. Now, this interview takes place early February. So it's been a good month since this. Maybe Tae-Soo Kim's memory is not perfect, but he specifically says it's January 3rd. Hay was out with Donald and did not come home until 0100 hours. So 1 o'clock in the morning, January the 3rd. The argument ended that day, and Hay did not appear to be bothered by it. So a couple of possibilities here. Tae-Soo Kim may simply be wrong about the date. He may be talking about this first date between Hay and Don, and that Hay got home after curfew, which I am assuming was midnight. And I always like to remind everybody, Hay is over 18 at this point, and her mother is still imposing a curfew on her. So he says that she did not come home until 1 a.m. If you count up the hours for this first date, it's hard to come up with it being that long. I'm assuming that their shift ended at 6. That was a typical shift. And then it takes them an hour to drive to the restaurant. So now it's 7. And then they sit there for a couple of hours. Now it's 9. They drive all the way back to the mall. Now it's 10. How long do they sit in the car? They're not having a big makeout session. They're just talking. I can't make this first date last long enough for Hay to not get home until 1 a.m. Maybe it did, but I'm going to take Tae-Soo Kim's word for it and say Don and Hay had a second date the very next night. And this would indeed be on a Saturday. January 2nd is a Saturday. Woodlawn High School is not going to resume classes until Monday. So New Year's Day is Friday. And we'll say, this is according to the information that we have. Hay has gone out with Don on Friday night, gotten home at a reasonable time. And then she goes out again with him the very next night. And this time she does not get home until 1 a.m. on Sunday the 3rd, when Tae-Soo Kim says Hay and her mother have yet another one of their fights, their arguments about her breaking curfew and staying out late. So, I don't know. There's nothing in Hay's diary about the two of them discussing going out again the very next night. So then, something happens, I think. Something happens during, one might guess, during the days before January 6th and that double date. I think at some point, the most likely one being before the 6th, it doesn't have to be, Robin re-enters Don's life because there's some reason why Don starts to pull away, why Don never takes Hay out again in a public way, except for this double date, which was clearly cooked up between Hay and Aisha. That just has to be the case. Don doesn't know Aisha. He had not suggested to Hay, how about we have a double date with your best friend from high school and her boyfriend, and let's go out in the middle of the week? I just don't think so. I think this was Hay talking to Aisha and saying, you know, we had that really great first date, and then we had a second date the very next night, and boy, he was kind of romantic that night. I have no idea what happened, but she was out until 1 a.m. And now he doesn't seem to be very interested in me, and I don't know what to do. And Aisha says, well, why don't you set up a double date? Maybe he just feels a little threatened. My boyfriend and I and you and Don could go somewhere. Let's go out for dinner and a movie on Wednesday night. So we know they did that. But something is going on here. Something happens to change Don's willingness to pursue a relationship with Hay. She has that double date, but the rest of the time, as far as we know, her contact with Don is at work, of course. But then she starts going over to his house after her work shift ends. We know this. We know this from her diary. She talks about driving to Bel Air as being one of her favorite activities. She's doing the driving. So Don has morphed from this gentlemanly person who takes her out to a nice place for dinner in a public setting, may I add, and treats her beautifully, to somebody who's not taking her out and is letting her come over to his house after work, where, he says on the stand, under oath, they became sexually intimate. I think Hay realizes he's losing interest in me. Something has happened. I need to really step up my game. But she does it in a way that is pretty counterproductive. So at that point, we now progress through the days until January 13th. And here, I've already laid out what I think is the sequence of events and the motive behind the confrontation that led to Hay's death. Here, I will just say, if Robin or somebody else Don was really interested in, but probably Robin, had come back into Don's life, had called him and said, "Hey, baby, I am really sorry. You're the love of my life. I want to get back together." And Don was faced with this dilemma. Oh, no. I've encouraged this other girl, and she thinks I'm really interested, but actually, I've never gotten over Robin. And I will point out, I've mentioned this, let me emphasize it again. Robin and Don have been married for 25 years. And we also know that Robin and Don were dating at the time of Adnan's trial. Now, it's not quite clear to me which trial we're talking about here. Krista Myers says that she was one of the witnesses at trial. And the witnesses were sequestered in the waiting room, and then they'd be called, and that Don had a girl with him when she was waiting in the room with him. And then Rabia and Colin, in their episode about this whole Robin-Don thing, episode 4 of their relaunch, they say that girl that was with Don was Robin. I'm not quite sure how we know this, but I'll take their word for it. And so Don decides, I really need to get back with Robin. I got to just tell this nice, pretty girl that I'm not going to be dating her anymore. So, as I say, I've laid out the sequence of events that I think happened. Let me now move on to a theory that is presented in episode 4. Of the relaunch of Undisclosed. And the reason why I'm taking all this time with Robin is because of the time that Rabia and Colin take with Robin and the theories that they present that at least might implicate Robin. I don't quite think this is fair, but I want to address the issues. So let's go back to the fateful scene in the car when Don has paged Hay during the day sometime, during the afternoon of January 13th, and said, come however much he can say with a pager, but basically, come by and meet me before you go pick up your cousin. And he's done this very deliberately because it will limit the amount of time that she can spend. And he's going to break up with her. And I've laid out what I think happened in the confines of that car with her becoming very angry and his punching her and then ending up strangling her. Let me say that since I did that episode for my podcast, and again, I don't think anybody else has done this. I talked my husband into helping me do a small, slow motion reenactment of this scene. So he and I are not the same sizes as Hay and Don. I'm a good 3 inches shorter than Hay and 20 pounds lighter. Remember, she is 5'6", 135 pounds. That's straight from the autopsy report. And she is an athlete. And I am most decidedly not an athlete. My husband, I think, I've never seen any actual physical description of Don. I think he's taller than Don and bigger, more muscular. Hay says that Don is built, but I've never seen a picture of Don that goes below his neck, so I cannot attest to the truthfulness of that description. My car is smaller than Hay's 1998 Nissan Sentra. I have a little Honda Fit. But we just tried it out. My theory about the contusions, the bleeding between the scalp and the sheath of muscle covering the scalp, the subgaleal hemorrhage that was on Hay's temple, was that Don punched her there. He was trying to punch her in the face, and she ducked. She turned her face away, and she ducked, and he hit her on the temple. And that is exactly congruent with what the autopsy says, the temple area. So we got in the car. I'm sitting in the driver's seat, of course. Jim, my husband, is sitting in the passenger seat. And one of the mistakes that's made about this scene, I've read this before, is, well, Don could not have gotten in enough forcefulness with a punch to make that hemorrhage because he would have been punching across his body. I've read that phrase. Well, that almost implies that he's sitting there primly in the passenger seat facing forward with his seatbelt on. And of course, that's not what was going on at all. When Jim and I got in the car, we both turned sideways. So we're facing each other. So our feet are trapped in the wells, the seat wells of the car. Jim cannot stand up, really, because the roof of the car is right there, the ceiling of the car. So he's trapped, I'm trapped. This idea, by the way, that Hay kicked that, I think it's the wiper lever, of course, is utterly ridiculous. That didn't happen at all. That was just Jay making something up because the police told him that that thing seemed to be dangling down. And how could he explain that? That was all a bunch of hoo-ha. But we tried doing a slow motion reenactment, and we did it 2 or 3 times. And if I ducked down and turned my head away, and Jim used his right fist and put it up against my temple, it matched the description of Hay's injuries. So the reason why I'm going into this in quite a bit of detail here is that this new theory was presented in the episode, the relaunch episode about Don, and about this theory that maybe a female was involved in Hay's death also. And it's this whole idea that the injuries to Hay's head, which involve the bruising, the bleeding of her temple, and then additional bruising or bleeding of the lower right quadrant of the back of her head, that those injuries could be caused by hair pulling. Now, I have to say, it doesn't take an expert to think this up. One of Colin Miller's commenters way back in 2015 suggested the same thing. I wonder if this subgaleal bleeding, the bleeding against the skull, between the scalp and the skull, could have been caused by hair pulling. And indeed, and this is another one of these instances where expert opinion is true in general, but not specifically. It is true that a good, strong hair pull can apparently cause this kind of bleeding against the skull. So then Rabia and Colin say, "Well, most of the time when you have hair pulling like this, it's caused by a confrontation between two females. Men do not usually pull women's hair." And then there's a commenter on Reddit, I believe, who says, "Oh, yes, they do. You picture some kind of violent, abusive behavior on the part of a man toward a woman, and she turns to run away from him. And guess what? One of the things he might do is grab her hair to keep her from running away." I think this whole hair pulling thing is an incredible red herring. And it's an incredible red herring because it doesn't really match what we think actually happened. So we think that Hay was killed in her car. We think that partly because she has such limited injuries. She has these two blunt force trauma injuries to her head, and then she has the actual manual strangulation that killed her. She has no abrasions. She has no additional bruises or cuts or anything like that. So Colin and Rabia do not say they think that Robin did get involved, but they certainly say she could have. And they specifically said maybe there was some kind of confrontation that unfortunately and tragically led to Hay's death. But that absolutely cannot be true. It cannot be true because the forensics do not support it. So as I said, Hay has these three very distinct injuries, and that's it. If she got into a hair-pulling match with another girl, Robin or somebody else, that would have to be outside the car. There's no way that this can be carried on within the confines of a car. And there would be other marks on her. And there aren't. There would be scratches. There would be maybe even bite marks, slap marks, slap bruising, that kind of thing. We're talking about this putative confrontation between two young women vying for the same guy. And I say it is utterly absurd. There is just no way that that happened. Then there's another theory that says, well, maybe those injuries to Hay's head could have been caused by a punch from a fist, but it's more likely that they were caused by a weapon of some kind. But then the theory also is, but you couldn't swing your fist hard enough to produce these injuries within the confines of a car. But you're able to swing a weapon within the confines of the car? That makes even less sense. And if Hay is outside the car, then again, you are faced with additional injuries. I mean, just picture this. Somebody gets into the car. It's Dawn, I think. Or it's a female, perhaps, and is threatening Hay, is angry at Hay, and she manages to get that door open on her side, and she falls out of the car and tries to get away, and then she's chased down and strangled. Again, there would be multiple injuries. And then she has to be dragged back into the car and taken somewhere because we know she was laid down flat on her face for 8 to 10 hours. The whole scenario does not fit with the forensics. And I know I keep repeating myself here because I just find this so frustrating that nobody seems to have actually thought through what would have happened. What would the forensics show us? And they would be very different. So my theory is the first injury to Hay's temple, I don't think it could possibly be from a hair pull, even if you think that there's a scenario where that would make sense, because as far as I've been able to determine, the bleeding goes down past her hairline. Margarita Correll, the ME, says, the medical examiner who did the autopsy says on the stand, it was over her eyebrow. It was on her temple. That's not where your hair grows. And then that back injury occurs in the heat of the battle as Hay is frantically trying to get free and Dawn bangs her head against the door frame or the window frame, probably the window frame. And it's also fast and it's also violent and unpredictable that it's hard to even parse out exactly how it would have happened. Let me mention one last piece of evidence that Rabia and Colin mention that leads them to think that a female was involved in this. And that is that there was unidentified female DNA found on, number one of the pieces of wire that was on the ground near Hay's body when she was found in Leakin Park. These DNA tests, by the way, were not done until 2018. The second female DNA that was discovered was one undifferentiated minor allele that could be identified as female underneath one of Hay's fingernails. Now, an allele is like one little bit of DNA. If my theory is right, and the scratches and cuts that were reported as being on Dawn's hands and wrists a day or two after her disappearance were from Hay fighting him off, then I find it very puzzling as to why we're not also told that there was residue under her fingernails from that. It's never been clear to me how much DNA was actually recovered from under her fingernails. We know that DNA deposits can be very unpredictable. And so I'm just going to have to leave it at that. This one minor female allele under one fingernail does not seem to me to amount to much. So let's get to our last problem here with some female being involved in Hay's death, because we know that Hay was manually strangled. And that typically women, just as a general biological class, do not have hands that are big enough and strong enough to strangle somebody. And so then you have, this is tragic, but it's also ludicrous, this scenario where first Hay gets into a hair-pulling fight with some female, either in or out of her car. And remember, as far as we know, this is taking place in the parking lot of Owings Mills. Now, it's probably in a little tucked away area, but it is still not all that private. And so then, after there's been this knockdown, drag out, hair pulling fight between Hay and this female, then a man moves in for the kill and strangles her. So we have two people involved. We almost have to have two people involved unless the female had unusually large and strong hands for her sex. So at that point, I think it is fair to say that no female, and certainly not Robin Kleindienst, was involved in any way in Hay's actual death. What she knew at the time, what she found out, and what she knows today are completely unknown. We know that by 2000, Dawn and Robin were cohabiting, and they married sometime, I believe, late in 2000. As I say, they've now been married for 25 years. They have two grown children. As I've said before, I am not including any current location information about Dawn and Robin. And I don't know their children's names and would not publish them if I did. So in the end, I think that I've made a pretty good case for there being some kind of love triangle with Robin having a relationship with Dawn. We know, by the way, that she was involved in some kind of ophthalmic work and that she may have worked at another lens crafters, not the one where Dawn worked. And we know this, interestingly enough, because a name that crops up in this episode 4 of the relaunch, the person I'm going to talk about in the next episode, is Catherine Michelle, that she agreed to be interviewed about Robin Kleindienst's employment history. She does not give any other information. She's not talking about Hayes killing or the aftermath at all. But we know Catherine Michelle is the person who helped confirm Don's faked alibi. And I find it very interesting that she was willing to talk to Sarah Kalin and be quoted on this podcast. So we'll get to her next week. And in the meantime, I would say Don acted alone in killing this beautiful girl. If my theory is correct, and there was no one else present but these two people who had gotten themselves into a situation that turned out so horribly. Come back next week for Catherine Michelle and for the wrap-up of the series. Talk to you then. Thanks for listening.